From the Dark, an omniscient narrator, tells us how we have arrived here. This commanding voice is soothing. We accept everything it says.
Our departure. In the popular and cinematic imagination, our world ends in cataclysm. We have cultivated a collective thirst for the aesthetics of disaster, producing a picturesque rendering of extinction that has sculpted our desire to witness it. Feeling impending disaster, we crave a dramatized Armageddon, anticipating it as an ultimate divine terminal experience. The suspense is killing us. Travel weary, in delirious anticipation of the awaited event, we increase speed, of course, towards those majestic, jutting rocks.
The ship in distress fires the cannon to give the alarm as it sinks, slowly.
The call to adventure. We are no longer on the brink of the abyss. The abyss is the shore on which we have landed, our new home. Only once we accept this fate may we begin to plot our new course of action. With the ship in tatters, the planned return is precluded. We are no longer voyeurs in this present situation.
Having sailed towards a despotic land where meaning falls from words like leaves.
Refusal of the call. Cinematic time contracts and spectacularizes living time, heightening the intensity of its passing. Living time, filled with banality, uncertainty, anxiety, hopeless yearnings, begins to scare us more than death. In desperation, we fill these moments with distractive experiences that placate our existential dread by dressing fear in the costume of the heroic. Heroicizing death is a time-worn tactic designed to march us valiantly into future horrors. No aesthetically sublime future mega-event will deliver us from this banal brutality. It is a gradient condition that is already our present. The present is terrifying because it is irreversible. Crossing the threshold. The archetypal myth narrative of the hero's journey begins when the home becomes untenable, necessitating departure. This call to adventure urges the hero to flee their homeland, overcoming initial doubts and fears. The threshold into the unknown is eventually crossed. There is a freedom in the crossover, where return to the past is precluded, where the only hope lies in confronting the unknowable. Rescue from without. In the disaster film, there is always a moment where hope feels futile. This is the moment that the external savior swoops in to save the day. The expectation of deferred responsibility gives us an alibi for complacency. Expecting a lifeboat, we flail around, having forgotten how to swim.
Drowning in the gap between immediate and delayed survival instinct, the castaway fights for air, not yet aware of the troubles awaiting on the distant shore. Your potential presence already compromises their survival plan. You are a natural enemy. Water coats the lens, seeping into the camera's body. The images begin to erase themselves.
The belly of the whale. The abyssal state where we find ourselves, where the annihilation of our species is the logical conclusion of our trajectory, has left the realm of fantasy. Countless fantastic past projections of our future state, now our present, have prepared us for this, psychologically, so that an air of comfort and familiarity permeates the abyss's hostile caverns. We can call this the end of history. We can call this apocalypse realism. But names are useless in the solitudinal void. The emotional impact of the disaster film relies on the assumption of the implicit heroism of the survivors and the viewer's identification with their plight. It is an ideological device that transforms the complicit killer into an heroic soldier and glorifies death by calling it martyrdom. Stories have always been instrumentalized to construct a world in which our desires are recalibrated against our self-interest and towards the interests of those who control the stories and the conditions of their reception. The cinematic apparatus became the ultimate manipulator of desires, a tool firmly in the hands of the manipulators of desire. To dismantle these desires, we must dismantle the apparatus and rebuild it in service of the construction of a mode of living outside of a race for self-immolation. Regardless of how the abyss is adorned, it will never contain beauty. At home in the ruins. Our home has already been transformed into a tomb, though it does not yet appear to us as one. We can already see the shape of our ruins, images of rubble borrowed from wars both real and imagined, buildings eroded by winds, piles of rubble, glass, metal beams, plastic trinkets, bones. Foxes and pigeons nesting in the rusted shells of cars and oil tankers, mice and mollusks making homes in food packaging. We find an empty comfort in the knowledge that vines and weeds will reclaim the landscape that we stole and sabotaged, as if time will absolve us. In the poem about love, you don't write the word love. The landscape of our living ruins is a hostile space in which battles already set into motion play out in an entropic endgame of temporarily deferred inevitable futures. In order to move forward, we must shatter our romance with our ruins. We must learn not to love the ruin, but we must leave room for love in the ruins.
The disaster film becomes documentary at the moment the protagonists realize they are no longer enacting a fiction.
The camera. The disaster film must absorb the viewer into its reality in order to enact its indoctrinating hold. It knows it must constantly distract us from the presence of the camera, because the camera in this space is utterly implausible. In the disaster film scenario, elements necessary for the filmmaking apparatus to operate are excluded. Electricity, industry, collaboration, time. There is no room for the camera within the cataclysm. There is no need to make images if there is no one there to see them. A world without a future is a world without images, the reverse also being so. The true camera of disaster would be constructed from the ruins of civilization. Camera cataclysmus. Chemicals concocted from evaporated salt water and silver gleaned from cell phones. Cameras cobbled from heating vents. Lenses carved from windshield shards. The camera of disaster is the specter of the camera of industry. apotheosis. As we race towards ruination, we must also prepare for life under its conditions. Hidden in cracks, like money in mattresses, concealed in bunkers, like tin cans and water. The fading tools of our present may still be preserved for future use. Just as death performs the montage that gives our individual lives meaning, we may still imbue our present with our collective future legibility and messages. Freedom to live. Desires to colonize space, to build militarized bunkers, to upload consciousness, are expressions of the logic of the cockroach, a goal of individualistic survival at all costs. An ambivalent yet definitive acceptance of our own mortality gives our lives a plane upon which we can appreciate time and our place in it. To deny this is a form of hatred of life. The logic of the cockroach. In the face of impending collective extinction, the logic of apocalypse meets the logic of capital and rushes to hoard future time like a commodity. Time being the only true expression of freedom, a new survivalist mentality enters the collective unconscious and seeks to subjugate it in order to monetize it as a dwindling asset. The atmosphere creates a form of dead time, where time becomes monstrous. The only way to overcome this death is to reclaim life as an abandoned site.
Occupying a genre like a building, the director sends the crew home and prefers to wander the halls like an uninvited guest.
The tenderness of maggots. The cinema's obsession with individual exceptionalism forces focus on the heroic protagonist, relegating their mentors and helpers to facilitating functionaries in the hero's journey. Panning out, the protagonist becomes implicated in an intersubjective project requiring collaboration. Like maggots, they work together to dismantle the carcass in order to return it to the world as something new.
Generational time shifts to geological time. The contours of our future erode, but there are still glyphs carved in the crevices.
Freedom to live. In the end, the heroes return to their homeland, transformed by the journey. We have also journeyed into the abyss and met its monster. We have looked into its eyes and learned that they are ours. The final scenes will be determined by how we act now, by blinding ourselves or changing our eyes' shape to search for new possible futures within the abyssal void. Our old home, transformed.
Silhouetted against a lightning sky, the ship in distress fires the cannon to give the alarm and the end.